fellow travelers, and welcome to the Phantom Galaxy, an exploration of the strange, the frightening, and the fantastic in pop culture. I'm your host, Nathan Bartlebaugh. Before we begin tonight, we have a bit of an announcement. If you've been following along with this podcast and with Pop Culture Ninja, the podcast that Nathan Bell and I began last summer, then you may have realized that things have changed, and everything has essentially become Phantom Galaxy now. A little bit about how that came about and where we're going with it. We produced over the course of the past year 40 different episodes. Somewhere in the middle of that, I had branched out with Phantom Galaxy, and the initial 10 episodes of Phantom Galaxy were sort of an exploration of pop culture, more specifically related to the genres that I love, science fiction, fantasy, and horror, with the intention of being able to get in a little bit closer and delve in a little deeper. Though our first 10 episodes are still relatively skimming the surface of what's out there. With Phantom Galaxy, we had a couple different guests, and most notably Chris Durham, who's become my co-host, Phantom Galaxy. Nathan and I continue to do Pop Culture Ninja. However, over the course of the past year, with our job situations changing and our responsibilities increasing, Nathan, in fact, is busy over at These Go to 11 podcast as well, that we wanted to look at whether or not to continue Pop Culture Ninja. And ultimately, we decided not to continue in the current form. From here on out, the podcast will be a bevy of different voices. I will still be the host. Nathan Bell will still join me from time to time. We're going to be recording regular segments. Chris Durham will also still be joining me as a regular co-host. The format of Phantom Galaxy going forward is going to be more of a magazine sort of feel, where we have several different guests and several different hosts. This will allow us to cover broader topics. Nathan and I couldn't read every book, see every movie, play every game. We want to be a little more specific and creative in our topics, our discussions. We've also become aware of the plethora of other podcasts that are out there that delve into genre fiction and genre ideas. Something that's really interesting to me personally is podcasts that are serialized fiction podcasts. And as Phantom Galaxy, we want to have the latitude to delve into all the facets that come with genre fiction. And we want to branch out and discuss myths, urban legends, stories, how stories come about, where do they come from, talk to those who create them. Talk to those who study them. We're interested in fiction. We're interested in science. We're interested in science fiction. And we want to be able to go wherever that road leads, that winding, crazy road. We want this to be anything but mundane because, after all, we get enough of that day to day. And we're still going to have reviews. In fact, we hope to increase our, particularly our book reviews, and we'll look at films. Films, of course, are kind of where I came from. They're my bread and butter. They're my comfort zone, but we also want to explore beyond that. Now, tonight's episode is going to be a summer movie preview. Chris and I are going to go through a list of all summer movies related to the genres we talked about: fantasy films, science fiction films, and horror films. There'll be a few titles in there that don't quite fit, but they're ones that we find interesting, that are compelling and out of the ordinary. And then after that, starting later this week, we're going to begin the format of Phantom Galaxy with various segments. We're going to have a big comic book superhero-related episode to dovetail with Free Comic Book Day coming up later this weekend. And then we're going to do a special Lovecraft episode, looking at some of the works of H.P. Lovecraft. And in that episode, we're also going to do a dramatic reading of one of his famous short stories. So there's a lot that's coming up, and we also are looking for feedback from you about what you want to hear about, what you want to see. And in future episodes, we're going to have some announcements about a few new voices that will be joining us on a more regular basis and where we plan to go. You can find us now at phantomgalaxy.podbean.com. All the old episodes of Pop Culture Ninja are on there as well, going all the way back to our first episode last May. And you can go back and check those out. I'm probably a little biased, but there was some good work in there. Particularly enjoyed a series that we did on Steven Spielberg, his fantasy and science fiction films. And you can check that out. I think that was around June. Our Twitter has now changed to Phantom Galaxy, and we're in the process of changing the Facebook page over as well. And there's also going to be a website that will have some reviews and articles on it, as well as the podcast at www.phantomgalaxy.com. So, without further ado, we're going to jump right into our big summer movie preview. Okay, now Chris and I are going to take a look at the summer lineup of movies this year for 2017.
Yeah!
We did this last year. Nathan and I did one for 2016. It's an interesting lineup of movies. There's not everything in here I'm excited for. It feels like, to me, I remember 10, 15 years ago, it always felt like May was the warm-up month, you know, where you kind of ran some of your movies that were big, but not that big.
And then not June, the really big blockbusters.
June and July always seem to be the really strong months. I feel like that's switched now, and that's largely probably due to Marvel, how Marvel tends to come out of the gate. And, I mean, I was thinking the other day, have we even had a movie that opened May that wasn't a Marvel movie in the past 10 years? I think since, what, like 2008 maybe, or 2010, probably every movie has been a Marvel movie, and that's kind of the same thing here. But May's a pretty packed month, and so what we're going to do tonight is just go through the movies opening from May to basically that first week or so in September, kind of through like Labor Day, because I feel like summer for the most part tends to extend
about that.
The first week or so of September is when you start moving out of summer release movies, and at that point, our goal would be to meet again and do the fall lineup. So what we're going to do is go through, just give you an idea of what's coming out, when it's coming out, our basic thoughts on it. Some movies we're going to linger on more than others. Of course, the big movie May 5th is Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. Chris,
I am excited.
You saw the first movie, what, like 3 to 4 times in the theater?
I think? I loved it. I couldn't help myself.
I'm not judging, because I
thought to myself when the movie first came out, I'm going to hate this movie because it got a freaking talking raccoon and a talking tree in it. They ended up being like some of my favorite parts of the movie. Like, they totally won me over with Guardians of the Galaxy. It was such an entertaining experience that I kept watching it. I saw it, like you said, I think about 4 times tops in the theater. So I'm really super stoked for Volume 2. I think that if they try to keep the same level of passion in creating a unique world for the audience, I think we're going to have a winner on our hands. So, I'm super excited about this one. Can't wait to see it.
You know, and so am I. The first movie, I believe, in retrospect, is my favorite of the Marvel, and you know, what's considered the MCU, the movies that exist within the Marvel universe. I did enjoy the original Iron Man. I liked the Thor movie. But Guardians of the Galaxy, to me, I think one of the things you mentioned, like, it has a talking tree. Has a talking raccoon. It takes place in a universe that's closer to the Fifth Element than it is Iron Man or Captain America. So they really had to try. They really had to work to make those elements fit. They had to think about how are we going to sell a talking raccoon on screen? Because
that's where Marvel thrives. When they really have to work.
They have
hard
to solve a problem.
Yeah.
And some of these movies, for me, I've always felt like some of the sequels coast. Iron Man 2 was coasting. I thought Thor 2 was coasting. I do think the Captain America sequels were stronger than the original because, like you said, they had to solve a problem. The first movie was a capsule movie that took place in a period setting and was sort of disconnected from the other Marvel
movies.
Which
I think was absolutely a brilliant way to start off with Captain America.
But they had to answer the second time through, what does Captain America look like and think like and behave like in his own storyline in the modern setting. It is part of the actual MCU storyline. And I think that's why Captain America Winter Soldier succeeded.
That's still one of my favorites.
They had to work to build it in.
But Guardians of the Galaxy is allowed to have a lighter tone. I've complained that sometimes I think Marvel takes itself too seriously. I think the lineup we have this year, we have this, we have Spider-Man this summer, we have Thor in November. Those movies,
this is a fun year for Marvel.
Yeah, these are the kinds of titles I would want to read if I was reading a comic right now. And that's how I felt watching Guardians of the Galaxy. It took me back to movies like The Fifth Element. The difference between Fifth Element and Guardians of the Galaxy is that there were characters you really liked, that you enjoyed. I was won over by Dave Bautista, of all people. My kids have latched on to Baby Groot, which is, of course, you know, by necessity, that's what the intention is. That's a cool thing. You know, the first movie has this big monosyllabic tree-like creature who doesn't do a lot in the beginning, but you come to love him over the movie. In that storyline, though, you now have him coming back as kind of a brand new character. He's completely
new. Essentially, yeah.
Yeah, you can sell new toys, but you have Baby Groot. He gets to grow up all over again. That kind of stuff is cool. I want to see more character development. I want to see James Gunn deliver the character development. I want to see him deliver the weirdness. I'm excited for it. It looks fun. It's colorful. The soundtrack. I'm as excited about Volume 2 soundtrack. My wife is... You got her the actual vinyl record. She loves it. She's looking forward to what's going to be on the next one. We still don't know yet. So there's a lot of things about this. It's fun. This is like... I remember when going to the summer movies was like an event, and this still feels like an event. Like,
absolutely.
Good or bad, I'm looking forward to this. Mm-hmm. So, and we see it next week, so we'll have hopefully a semi-early review for you guys.
Yeah.
We see it on Tuesday of next week. This is what movies like the Men in Black movies, the movies like The Fifth Element were back in the 90s. Just like you went there, you paid your ticket to have a good time.
You got a fun action movie, and you were laughing the whole time.
And I've heard from sources that there are no less than 5 end credit sequences.
Wow.
So stick around. Stick around until they turn the lights on and tell you to get out of the theater.
Jeez.
So, at the same date, if you're the guy or gal who likes to go to the indie movie of the time, as far as genre movies go, there's a movie called Another Evil. It's directed by Carson Mell. And it actually debuted this past year. I don't think it debuted there, but one of the places it played was Spooky Movie Festival in Silver Spring. And it was one of the movies that tempted me to go. Unfortunately, our schedules didn't line up so we could go. But the plot of this sounds fun. The trailer is low budget. But the plot is... I'll just read what IMDb says. After encountering a ghost in their vacation home, Dan and his wife Mary consult an exorcist. Unsatisfied with the verdict, Dan goes behind his wife's back to seek a second opinion and secretly hires Oz, who promises to get rid of the beings. Oz and Dan spend a weekend together in the vacation home, exercising...
Wait. You say this is a horror movie. It sounds like a romantic comedy.
It might be. It's a comedy. It's listed as comedy. They're exercising the EFD, the evil, fully determined beings.
No way.
But Dan soon realizes that ridding the home of evil won't be as simple as it seems. So the trailer of this, though, is that Dan and Oz, it looks like your indie film where you have two odd couple characters and Oz is just horribly irritating. And the question seems to be, if this guy can't eradicate demons, why am I wasting my time with him? It looks interesting. It looks fun. I would love to, if Carson Mell is out there, I would love to get him on and like see the film and maybe interview him, because it looks like the Odd Couple of horror movies.
That sounds really entertaining. I would watch that.
Yeah, sure. I mean, if it delivers, this has potential.
Yeah.
So stay tuned. I really want to see this. I really want to screen this. I'd love to get you guys a review. But again, Another Evil. My suspicion would be this is going to be a VOD rental, a movie that if you can't get out on that weekend to see Guardians of the Galaxy. Then May 12th, we have King Arthur, Legend of the Sword. Now, I'll say this up front. I feel a weird obligation to watch any King Arthur movie that comes out. This has been devastatingly bad for me in the past.
This is a weird phenomenon that I have never understood. King Arthur stuff never really appealed to me that much. I don't know why. But it's like every time a new King Arthur movie comes out, everybody I know that's into any kind of like science fiction or fantasy has to go see it. This to me looks like it would be hard to drag me into that theater, honestly. I mean, some Guy Ritchie stuff I like, but there's nothing in the trailer that I've seen so far that indicates this is going to be a fun, interesting movie. I mean, it just looks kind of, I don't know, it looks kind of derivative. And who is Goose Fat Bill? That was never in the King Arthur lore, to my knowledge, unless I missed something.
It's a reimagining, Chris.
Yes.
Here's the thing. Going through college, you read La Morte Arthur. As a kid, I read King Arthur and His Knights of the Round Table. I was exposed to, like, Disney's Sword in the Stone. We reread stories. I saw Excalibur movies like that. There's something about the Arthurian legend at its heart that is intriguing to me. I think the reason that most people flock to it is because it's one of the most recognizable base levels for the fantasy stuff you mentioned.
Yeah.
Dungeons and Dragons, LARPing, Renaissance festivals. They all go back, essentially, to the King Arthur myth. I find the King Arthur myth legitimately fascinating. However, I think it's strange to say that with something as rich as the King Arthur legend, there have been very few good movies from it. Particularly in what we consider the modern era, from like the 70s forward, you don't have a lot that's very good. There were a few movies made about Percival and the Search for the Holy Grail that are interesting. But when you get down to the movies, John Borman's Excalibur, which isn't by no means perfect, is probably the best one you got. That's got a young Helen Mirren. It's got a really neat performance by Nicole Williamson as Merlin. It's an interesting movie. I like that movie, but it's not perfect. It doesn't quite capture what I would say is King Arthur.
Mm-hmm.
The modern King Arthur movies have been kind of terrible. First Night with Sean Connery. I mean, in that movie, Richard Gere plays Lancelot. Gere! I mean,
you know, he slays the ladies. So,
something. That's a disappointment. We had the King Arthur with Clive Owen. That was a disappointment. We had Merlin on TV.
Sickening disappointment.
With Sam Neill, which had potential, but again, you're hampered by the TV level visual effects. You're hampered by the
writing. Yeah, that was pretty bad.
Yeah, there's just not a definitive, you can look at this and say, this is the King Arthur movie that I want to see. And I see the previews of the Guy Ritchie movie, and I am not convinced that this is the King Arthur movie I want to see.
Well, now, it takes place in Londinium, so.
Londinium, right, right. I mean, now, that being said, I kind of do like Guy Ritchie. I think his last few movies, I was a skeptic about his Sherlock Holmes movies. I by no means think they're perfect, but I liked them.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed both of them.
I have to grudgingly agree with you on that.
I thought that the stop motion speed up stuff wasn't that good, but you know, Jude Law convinced me is a good Watson.
Yeah.
And I see here he's basically the villain of this piece. Charlie Hunnam, he's good in Sons of Anarchy. I haven't seen that whole show. I thought he was almost like a stiff in Pacific Rim. I just saw him in the movie The Lost City of Z. Very good.
Mm-hmm.
The guy has potential. I don't know if he's Arthur. I want to see Guy Ritchie's Arthur. I do want to see his take only because that sense of completism in me.
Mm-hmm.
Do I think it's going to be a good movie? I really don't know. I suspect,
based on the stuff you've seen so far in the trailer, what do you feel about it?
I think that if the script is not there, this is going to be a movie of all flash and style.
I don't even see any style in it for what I
see. Oh, there's style, but it's the Guy Ritchie style. It just is, it's a style you mean, it's like Michael Bay has a style.
Oh,
It's not a style I'm interested in, but it's a style. Guy Ritchie has developed a certain style from the Sherlock movies or even a little earlier than that onward. It worked for a movie like The Man from U.N.C.L.E. It could work for King Arthur. It could give it its own bend. I'll say this. This is still... I would be astonished. I'll be surprised. I will give you $5 if this is the King Arthur movie that I've always wanted. It's not. It's not going to be. But I'm
then
willing,
why lowball it? Let's make it 20 and make it interesting.
I don't think... I think potentially Guy Ritchie could deliver a movie that's interesting. Because of Sherlock Holmes...
I have not yet seen Man from U.N.C.L.E., and I actually did want to see that one. It looked pretty good.
So I'll give it a chance. An interesting casting. Jaimin Hansu is Sir Bedivere. That's an interesting choice. Aiden Gillen, who plays...
I think he's a good actor. I enjoy his
Aiden Gillen there. Plays Littlefinger on Game of Thrones. I don't know who Goose Fat Bill is. Guy Ritchie's clearly added a character that sounds like a low-level thug in a British gangster movie.
Exactly.
And so maybe...
You'd expect Goose Fat Bill to roll into Sherlock Holmes' film.
That's like, right. So, but maybe King Arthur is a medieval British gangster film. I might be okay
it
with
might
that.
Be,
I don't know. I'm willing... You know what? You know who Guy Ritchie kind of reminds me of is Baz Luhrmann. Who did the, like, most recently, which is still a couple years ago in 2013, he did The Great Gatsby.
Mm.
Like, I went to see Baz Luhrmann's The Great Gatsby and expected a train wreck. And to a certain extent, I enjoyed it. Because what I went in expecting to see was Baz Luhrmann's Great Gatsby. When I walk into King Arthur, I want to see Guy Ritchie's King Arthur, whatever that ends up being. Yeah. We'll see. No kidding. If you are not sold on King Arthur, if you haven't seen Guardians of the Galaxy 3 times by May 12th,
I may have.
Jed awake. It's funny because the description says from the creators of the iconic Final Destination. Would you consider Final Destination as iconic?
I remember when it came out, I saw it a bunch of times, not in the theater, but
it was fun.
I enjoyed it a lot. I wouldn't call it iconic.
No, no, no. And I think,
mean, yeah, they made a franchise out of it, but just because it's a franchise doesn't mean it's iconic.
So here's why I'm interested. Here's the plot. Kate Bowman is a straight-laced social worker who finds herself plunged into a world of supernatural terror, investigating a series of mysterious deaths. Pretty original, right? Each victim suffered from a chilling condition known as sleep paralysis.
Now, sleep paralysis is no joke. That screws you up when it happens.
That's creepy. A movie handling that idea could be cool. Here's the thing. Kate Bowman is played by Jocelyn Donahue, who was a star of House of the Devil. Who, I think, did a really good job.
Yeah, I like that movie. Yeah.
She's a convincing character actor.
Yes.
And I don't see her in a lot. So I will give Dead Awake a chance. I suspect Dead Awake will be, again, that movie that you can probably catch on VOD.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be the movie that if you can't get out to the theater to see Guardians of the Galaxy or King Arthur or whatever's playing that weekend, you can see Dead Awake, hopefully. Mm-hmm. It's limited release otherwise. We go to May 19th. Now, Chris, you and I have been talking about this movie for a little bit. And we've been trying to, I think, get ourselves amped up for it. We see it, I think, a week before it opens, and that is Alien Covenant. I really want to do, before this movie releases, the week the movie releases, I really want to sit down and do an episode about the Alien films in general. Alien, to me, is one of my absolute favorite horror science fiction franchises, just hands down. Like, mm-hmm. probably one of my favorite franchises, period. I know not every movie is great, but if you take the Alien and Predator movies and just shove them into a closet somewhere, which is what I would do, I have liked every single Alien movie. I liked Alien. I loved Alien Aliens. I like the Alien 3 director's cut. I like Alien Resurrection. I don't love those movies. They have great flaws, but I like them.
You mentioned the director's cut. I'm glad you did, because that is an interesting take on Alien 3. The Alien 3 director's cut. Very different movie from Alien 3.
Yeah, I think Alien
3... It's like a half an hour longer or something.
No, and I think the Alien 3 theatrical cut is just too dour, it's too damp, it's just too mundane.
Mm-hmm.
The Alien 3 director's
cut... I really agree with you about that.
...adds enough substance that you can feel what they were trying to do. I don't think they quite got there. Alien 3 has a troubled history, something we can talk about if we do a podcast mm-hmm. on the Alien films. But it worked to an extent. Alien Resurrection's the same way. There's stuff in that movie that I love. There's stuff in that movie that I scratch my head at.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, there's just something about the Ripley character. There's something about the aliens themselves. I am drawn to that series. The aliens themselves aren't going to carry a movie. We saw that with Alien versus Predator. I hated both of those movies. Prometheus. I like Prometheus. You and I have discussed this at length. Mm-hmm. I've got issues with it. But so far, this series, and I don't think it's just the nostalgia talking, I've liked every entry. I think Alien Covenant, which comes out on May 19th, has the potential to direct. I love that Ridley Scott went back to it. I do.
Yeah, I do too.
I didn't think Prometheus was perfect. I love that he's going to follow this up. You and I just recently watched the prologue kind of short film.
The cool thing about this movie is they have been adding little prologues here and there. Like, I think there's two official prologues out now. One was when, I think they call it like The Last Supper or something.
It basically introduces you to the crew of the ship. And it makes you kind of like them. It makes you like Danny McBride. That's the hard thing to do. Yeah.
But then they released one just the other day called Alien Covenant: The Crossing, I believe.
The Crossing,
and it takes the two central characters from Prometheus, David the android, and Noomi Rapace's character. I forget her name at the moment.
At the end of that, David's just ahead, and she wants to go find the engineers, mm-hmm. and we're left at that moment.
And they take a couple of minutes. It's not a really long prologue. It's like 2.5 minutes or so. And they show you them like going off on the ship, searching for the engineer homeworld, and kind of what their life is like now, like what's going on, how they've gotten where they've gotten, and a nice little surprise. I don't want to ruin anything for anybody, but nice little twist at the end of that prologue. That
and it's narrated by David, and it kind of, and that narration sort of reminded me of the original narration that was on the Blade Runner, the original cut of Blade Runner. When Blade Runner was released, the studio was concerned that people wouldn't understand it. So they went back and had Harrison Ford record an entire narration. So if you own the Blade Runner, like the entire box set of all the, 17 cuts or whatever of Blade Runners, that one's on there. That was the original one. And a lot of people were happy when they took it off. I kind of prefer it off. But it's interesting. It creates a noir sense to it. I like whoever cut this bit together, The Crossing, whether it was Ridley Scott or someone else, it's done really well. There's a lot of information.
I was super excited watching it.
They drop something at the very end that you're like, oh, that's so neat. There's this sense to me, and I hope this is true, it wasn't present in either of the trailers. Because, honestly,
they've kept this part of it hush-hush pretty much up until now.
The first part of these two trailers really suggested that Fassbender was playing a different android than Walter.
Mm-hmm.
In the same sense that Bishop is different than Ash in the Alien, Alien 1 and Alien 2, where Ian Holm is Ash and Lance Henriksen is Bishop. Here you have David and Walter, both played by Michael Fassbender, but essentially different androids. And they're going to meet each other, and they're very, very different. And this looks like, if this movie does try to cash in on when that small segment that The Crossing represents, this could be, in the same way that the Alien series was ultimately about Ripley, this could ultimately be the series about David, about the evolution of the android.
I could see
and
that.
The fact that Ridley moved from this movie, the Alien movie originally, to Blade Runner and then to Prometheus, and who wanted to link those worlds, this could be fascinating. I mean, this opens up more excitement for Alien Covenant than I previously had.
Yeah,
I mean, it
because
opens
of
the
that
potential.
I mean, I was already kind of excited for this, but now I'm very excited about it because that really opens up, like you say, opens up a lot. Yeah.
And honestly, like we're sitting here now, and it seems so blasé, but can you imagine a world where we thought we were going to get another Alien series directed by Ridley Scott in 1997 when Alien Resurrection came out? That didn't seem like a feasible option. So I'm excited.
After Resurrection came out, Alien Resurrection, and they're saying, well, there's not really much left to do with Alien except, I mean, we could go low budget with it, make like, you know, a low budget Alien series. And I was like, this is so completely far from that.
Like we've had for the previous two, you know, release dates, there's going to be a small option. Another small science fiction option. This movie's called The Survivalist. It's directed by Stephen Fingleton, Irish film. I've seen this movie. I saw this movie 2 years ago.
Wow.
They gave me a screener for it when I think it was Fantastic Fest or Fantasia 2015 was in town. I say in town, I actually mean in Canada. But this is another end-of-the-world movie. It's a small film. If you've seen movies like The Road, things of that nature, Z for Zachariah, this movie has similarities to that. It's a small character piece. And Chris, I don't know if we've spoken about this, but there's been a weird group of movies and books, particularly books, that have popped up in the wake of, like, end-of-the-world post-apocalyptic, that are survivalist stories that seem to be made for, like, actual survivalists. Those people who think they can survive World War III, and they want you to lay out
Doomsday
how they'll be able
preppers
to do it. Yeah. And some of these people, I think, are writing novels. Hey, this is what I would do. And instead of their writing their name, they write a character's name. But this is different. This is character-driven. It deals with a guy who is, basically, he's just fortified himself. It's post-apocalyptic, but all of that is really left to your imagination. How the world fell apart, why the world fell apart. It deals with one character, and he meets a starving woman and her teenage daughter who come to his abode that he has basically prepared so he can defend himself against everyone who's coming in. And not just, of course, physically prepared himself. He's emotionally prepared himself. So he has his own internal emotional defenses up as well. Does deal with some of those things that you probably haven't had to consider since a more feudal sort of system where, okay, we need to survive. So when the mother comes in, she's willing to offer her daughter to sleep with him. Again, like I said, I think it's a little derivative, but the performances are good. Cinematography is great. I don't know why the movie has sat around this long before being released. This is the kind of thing that I think people discover on Netflix. They're going to latch onto it a little bit. It's going to gain some momentum for the people who are involved in it. So it is surprising to me. I remember when the movie came out, and I honestly thought it had released already. So Survivalist, a small movie, worth your time. It's not going to blow your mind. It's not going to reimagine the apocalypse for you. But you're going to have some good performances, and you're going to have some really beautiful cinematography.
That sounds fantastic. I love that.
Towards the end of May, we get a couple of movies. One's a big movie that we probably didn't need. And that's probably true of most of the movies we've talked about. But, you know, this is a movie I can't help feeling its time has passed. There was a point when you and I were probably all over this. We're willing to watch, you know, whatever new installment came out in the series. But it, to me, it's kind of done. And that's the Pirates of the Caribbean series.
You're right. You're absolutely right about it. I thought, you know, the first three movies, the last two were a bit of a stretch, but I still enjoyed them for what they were. I still had fun with them. But by the time the fourth one rolled around, it kind of lost the interest in the franchise. It lost a lot of steam to me, and they didn't really I mean, they had one or two little spots here and there, but for the most part, you didn't see any of the characters that you grew to love in the first three movies. I mean, you had Jack Sparrow, and you had
Barbossa.
But beyond that, not really much. So to me, that was, I mean, it was all right. I wasn't super sold on it. Why they're doing a fifth one, I'm not sure. But it looks like they're bringing back some of the old characters.
They're doing a fifth one, my friend, because of the doubloons. Because there's a thought
the Hollywood
that they're going to make money. The fourth movie was such an attempt to move away from that to me, I just found it banal. I was tired of the Jack Sparrow shtick. The third movie had ships carried by crabs. It had a giant sea goddess who grows to gigantic proportions. It was like a Ray Harryhausen movie come to life. The Kraken,
I just loved all the crazy, like the pirates that had all turned into some sort of fish, sea creatures
who were
like,
becoming a part of the ship.
It was awesome.
That's great. Great I like design. That kind of stuff. They've gone back to that in this film. Who is Joaquin Ronning and Espen Sandberg? They're different directors than they did a version of Kon-Tiki. Which was a really good movie. It was an adaptation of the book that was based off of Thor Iredale's actual travels, where he traveled across the Pacific Ocean.
Which, by the way, is awesome.
Yeah, it's basically a balsa wood rack. Yes. To see if he could recreate how it was done in ancient times. And the movie version is visceral and fantastic. It's a movie on the water. I have hope in these guys. I am done with Johnny Depp's Jack Sparrow, more or less.
Fair enough.
Thought he was great when he first showed up, but basically most of his performances, outside of some of the series stuff, they've all been a version of Jack Sparrow. His work with Tim Burton and Gore Verbinski, it just has sort of cemented him in this one kind of caricature.
Yeah.
But this movie...
And to be honest, the Alice in Wonderland movies have not helped at all.
Oh, no, not at all. My Mad Hatter drives me insane.
It does drive you mad, no pun intended.
Yeah. But this movie, Orlando Bloom is coming back in this movie. The last trailer, the international trailer, has Elizabeth Swann, has Keira Knightley. If you liked those storylines, this is going back to that. I don't know what to think. I'm not excited for it.
But I will see it.
There you go. And I think that's what Disney's counting on.
Schlubs like you and I.
That's true.
Perfect.
The same time, again, if you're looking for a smaller movie, it's going to be a limited release. There's a movie called The Berlin Syndrome. And the reason this is probably more of a thriller. The reason this is on this list is because we do kind of commit ourselves to also being interested in all things horror. And to me, there's not anything much more horrifying than wrongful imprisonment. Or capture, if you will, and deals with an Australian photographer who's played by Teresa Palmer, who we recently saw in Lights Out. She was good in Lights Out.
Yes, indeed.
And she meets a guy, you know, this is the start of a romantic comedy in some movies, but not here. And Night of Passion ensues, but guess what? She ends up locked in her apartment. And I guess the Berlin Syndrome, you know, it could be referencing a number of things, but we've also heard a lot of stories about people who are locked in a room that's walled off and no one ever knows they're there. And this idea of being imprisoned and kept away from everyone and by someone who you initially trust, there's a level of horror there. And we have a female director, Kate Shortland, who her last movie was a movie called Lore in 2012, a World War II drama dealing with the Nazis. I don't know if you saw it or not. Very good movie. I think this has the potential to be good, you know? If this is character driven, if this doesn't become a torture film, which I have no reason to believe it will be, and Palmer's a good actress, I think this could be terrifying. To me, this is the kind of thing that hits those buttons. Everyone, I think, has their buttons, you know. Not every movie's going to scare everybody. But this idea of being imprisoned against your will in a scenario where you can't get out and no one else knows you're there, and you're at the whim of somebody else, if you handle that in a way that's psychologically compelling, you've kind of got me in a horror sense, a sensibility. So those are my thoughts.
Yeah, that sounds interesting. I'll check that out.
So that's May. I mean, that's a lot of stuff in May. And I think Alien and Guardians of the Galaxy are the go-tos for me. But I'm holding out hope.
I agree.
For Pirates and King Arthur. So we get to June, and June 2nd has a movie that my son has told me. I asked him, point blank, what superhero movie are you most excited for? There are two coming out on June 2nd.
I can tell you what it is, and I don't even know what's coming out on June 2nd. Just because I know Johnny.
What's that?
Captain Underpants.
You're absolutely right. Captain Underpants, the first epic movie. Now, by most standards, when I hear the word epic in the actual title of a movie, I tend to disregard it right off. But, you know, I'll give... I'll give Johnny the benefit of the doubt. This is the first of four animated movies, or five, I think, animated movies on our list here. And honestly, and this may be very, very sad, this is probably the best of the bunch.
Honestly, I'm just going to let you run with this because I'm just one of those sour, horrible people with no soul who does not like kids' movies. So there's nothing that appeals to me about this, and I don't want to keep saying that over and over. So when we get to an animated movie, feel free to just take
it. And we've got Jordan Peele, Kevin Hart, Nick Kroll. We have Ed Helms as the voices in it. Captain Underpants was originally a book series, and I'll be honest, it's a book series I wish I wrote. Not because it's so brilliant, not because it's so eloquent, because it takes a kind of sarcastic humor that I have and has managed to make probably millions of dollars off of it. And appealed to kids, because, like you said, what kid doesn't love references to butts and underpants?
You're right.
And the very basic plot of this is that two kids manage to hypnotize their very strict principal into becoming their own superhero, Captain Underpants.
Brilliant.
So that's great. I recommend go out and find the books. This movie, I watched the trailer. My children laughed. I looked at my children. I double checked.
You did
not
laugh.
They were laughing. Not personally. So
you tend to like these things more than I do.
I do. I do like children's films. When a children's film is done well, it can be really, really good. I'm not convinced this is going to be really, really good. When I look at what David Soren has directed, his last movie was Turbo, about a snail that got a dose of nitrous that was able to race.
I was unfortunate enough to actually see that one. Not in the theater, but I was kind of forced.
I will say, one of the issues with this summer, as I look across the slate, there's very few films that seem to be aimed at young kids that aren't kind of pandering. And Captain Underpants is one of those movies.
I was going to say you thought the problem this summer was that Nick Kroll was actually getting work.
And nothing I can do about that, man, but I don't have to pay for it. I'll keep an open mind. I don't know. I will tell you this. I'll take my kids. I'll probably get the books. I'll probably read them to them. But we'll see. Captain Underpants is not your speed. There's another superhero who kind of wears underpants. That's Wonder Woman. You and I have probably spoken, or have probably spoke about how we feel about what DC has done with their
just ad nauseum,
so
and over and over.
Batman versus Superman was one of the movies I really disliked last year. I rewatched it recently with my kids. I liked it a little better, not a lot. I see the trailers for the Justice League movie. Nothing's convincing me. I will say that this movie, different director. We have Patty Jenkins, who in 2003 directed a pretty good version of the Eileen Wuornos story with Charlize Theron called Monster.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
It was
good.
A good movie.
I like that.
A legitimate movie. Patty Jenkins is doing this film. Gal Gadot was good as Wonder Woman.
I think they made an excellent choice by having a female director for this one.
Yeah,
I really do.
Zack Snyder still has a story writing credit. I hope that's minimal. I don't think Zack Snyder was the right choice for the DC universe.
And, you know, I was very positive, thinking very positively about Batman versus Superman, even though you're like, I don't know, Chris, this looks kind of crappy.
I was surprised. Like, you were more negative on it than I was.
I literally broke my heart. I mean, like, I am a huge nerd. I love Batman, Superman,
He's not
all
kidding
that kind
people.
Of stuff. I mean, like, I love Marvel. I love DC. I love them equally. I don't like. There's no point of me that's saying as a Marvel, I'm a Marvel fanboy above DC or vice versa. So I was excited about this movie. I thought it was going to be awesome. I go in there and just brutally disappointed by this miserable film. And I mean miserable because it's just so dark and depressing and miserable.
There was no understanding of the comic book characters.
The only thing I liked about it was Gal Gadot as Wonder Woman. I thought she was awesome. She was in it for all of 5 minutes. But I'm actually looking forward to this movie. I think that Gal Gadot has what it takes to make an awesome Wonder Woman. But again, you've got the Zack Snyder sort of taint on her. I used to like some of Zack Snyder's stuff, but like with what he's been doing lately is kind of disappointing. So who knows how this is going to turn out, but I'm looking optimistically towards this. I think it's got, well, from what I've seen, enough light, fun, humor to go along with the Wonder Woman action scenes and the darkness of the story that I think it could be good.
But, yeah, and Chris Pine, of course, kind of plays the love interest, the male character in the story. This is going to be like Marvel's Captain America. We've got a period piece. We've got a movie that's intended to be kind of an origin story, and it looks fun. I don't know that DC's doing this stuff in the right order.
No.
I'm kind of interested, too. There's a lot of it that looks very generic. Like you said, Wonder Woman was one of the very few highlights of Batman vs. Superman for me.
Yeah.
I want to see this movie. But I'll also say this. I think that in a larger picture, this is really going to... This might decide the fate. To me,
this kind of makes or breaks it, yeah.
Yeah, because even if I don't think Justice League is going to prove anything. Batman vs. Superman made a lot of money, but it was still largely considered a flop because of how poorly people felt about it. I mean, the truth
they're
going to
keep making them regardless because they're making tons of money.
They may be, but my thing is Zack Snyder's involvement, to the extent that it has probably even diminished since Batman vs. Superman... He's still involved to an extent with Wonder Woman. If Wonder Woman is going to flop, but I'm not certain that it will, you know, if it flops or if it does well, it's really going to determine, I think, the future of the standalone movies. It's going to determine what level of Aquaman movie we get. The Flash is still jumping directors constantly. I mean, I'm not sold yet. If Wonder Woman sticks the landing, that might save the DC universe. I just don't see this being a viable thing yet.
I think this
is the linchpin to me, whether or not it
I
goes.
Agree. I absolutely agree about that. I mean, she's obviously one of the, as they refer to them, Holy Trinity, you know, the DC universe.
And honestly,
one of the really big ones.
The way they've handled Batman, I like Ben Affleck as Batman, but the work,
I do too.
But the way they've written him is not good.
Just awful.
Superman. I think Henry Cavill's fine as Superman and Clark Kent. This is going to decide it.
I hope they get it right because I really like Gal Gadot as Wonder Woman. I think that she could do very well.
I want to see it do well. I do. Yeah. I mean, I'm not that critic who wants to see something fail just to fail. I want to see DC pull it
out. Who doesn't
want to
see an entertaining Wonder Woman movie?
I love these kind of pulpy adventure epics. Movies like The Mummy, The Mask of Zorro, last summer's Legend of Tarzan, The Rocketeer. This fun matinee epic. June, we move to June 9th. There's a horror movie coming out. Called It Comes at Night.
This looks cool to me. This looks really cool.
Yeah. Original horror.
Mm-hmm.
Feels like the kind of thing that would be the basis for a short story. This has Joel Edgerton in it, who's an actor who I've really grown to appreciate over the years. He has talent. And this is another movie that in some ways feels like he could play as post-apocalyptic. The basic setting deals with a family who's in this home in a kind of desolate sort of a secluded environment in the woods. And as you're watching the trailer, you get this feeling that there might be an epidemic or something that this family, that the patriarch of this family, who's Joel Edgerton, is protecting his family from. And then you have a desperate couple who wants in from protection. And you can't tell, though, if this is an invasion film, whether there are monsters involved, or this is an affection movie, or maybe something like I Am Legend. Maybe it's in the middle of the two.
Who knows?
It's like the way The Witch came out, and you weren't sure what movie you were exactly going to get. If I'm going to sit here and say this is the horror movie to see over the summer, this is the horror movie to see over the summer.
This looks strong, like a strong horror movie. I'm very interested in that, as opposed to the other horror movie coming out.
It's funny because the two movies on June 9th are both going to be appeal to the same crowd, I think.
Probably.
And It Comes at Night sounds original. We don't know what's happening with it. We like the cast. The trailer is strong. And then there's The Mummy. Mm. And you used the phrase break my heart a few minutes ago. And you know what really does kind of break my heart? This is apart from how I feel about this actual movie. This is Universal has not figured out what to do with their classic monsters. Back
That's
in the
so
day.
Sad.
A few years ago, in 2012, they released a Blu-ray version of the classic monsters. I have that. I've watched some of the movies with my kids. The Mummy. I love that movie. You know, I'll be perfectly honest. I enjoyed the original Brendan Fraser reboot of The Mummy in 1999. It was a fun movie.
You talk about pulpy adventure movies.
Yeah, the sequels, leave the sequels where they are. But the original movie, it was comedic, it was fun, it was a little bit...
It had some scary moments.
It had some scary moments, it had some Abbott Costello Meet the Mummy moments.
Yes.
I enjoyed it. And since then, around when we got this idea of shared universes, Marvel's kind of ruined everybody else because they're all thinking in terms of, we have to create a
we
shared
gotta be
universe.
Like Marvel.
And Universal just is not sticking the landing. 2010, they released The Wolfman with Benicio del Toro and Joe Johnston directing. There were things I liked about that movie. The makeup effects were great. As a whole, I didn't like it.
Yeah, I mean, as a concept, that on paper, that sounded like it would have been a perfect Wolfman movie.
I don't know.
It did not work.
I don't know if Universal did it, but then we had Victor Frankenstein last year. Another bomb with...
And they did that Dracula Untold
Dracula
mess.
Untold with Luke Evans that was like a Lord of the Rings adventure film.
When you saw the fist coming out of the sky made of bats.
They always go back and say, well, this is... No, that wasn't the start of the Universal Monsters.
Yeah,
this
I
is.
Mean, this... even in the trailer, they're talking about... Welcome to a new world of gods and monsters.
Right. This is The Mummy, directed by Alex Kurtzman, who is part of the Orky and Kurtzman company that have worked on things I've liked, like Fringe and the first season of Sleepy Hollow, but they've also worked on things I haven't been a fan of, like the Transformers movies.
Mm.
And the Star Trek
this
movies.
This looks like The Mummy strained through like Transformers.
You're absolutely right. So Alex Kurtzman is the director on the film. Christopher McQuarrie, who did the movie I like called The Way of the Gun and a couple other films, he did the first Jack Reacher movie, which is relevant because this stars Tom Cruise. And when I look at this trailer, if I was just flipping through channels and saw this trailer, this looks like a Tom Cruise runs movie.
Yeah.
Now, so, interesting twist, Sophia Boutella, who we've seen recently in both Kingsman and in Star Trek Beyond, she played the female alien character.
I like her. I think she's
good. She's got talent. She looks interesting as the evil mummy. It's nice that we have a female version. The most recent international trailer, it still kind of looks like a modern update of the 99 Mummy movie.
Yeah.
This isn't a creepy, contained...
It's weird that they...
horror movie. This is a big action movie with
Tom
it's
so
Cruise.
Strange. Like, if you're going to reboot it based on the original material... Leave the Brendan Fraser thing. Let it be its own thing. But
no,
why reboot based on that?
I've also read something recently, and reading about the movie, that the Russell Crowe character, in the trailer, he's a character who keeps kind of telling to them, well, meet Princess whatever. You know, he clearly seems like he's an antagonist. And I've read that he's a character whose last name is either Jekyll or Hyde.
What?
So he's Dr. Jekyll or he's Dr. Hyde or something like that. So it seems like there's another attempt to build another character in. I could be wrong on that.
You know what?
So
let him do this. Let him make this movie. Let him make the next, like, make an Invisible Man, make a Dracula movie, make all these movies, and then just say, you know what we're really building up to was the League of Extraordinary Monsters or something. Like,
right. So here's the thing.
How stupid can you be?
You want to know what movie they should have made first. And this might sound strange.
Let's
coming from someone who loved the classic takes on Frankenstein and Dracula. Creature from the Black Lagoon. And I'll tell you why.
Nice. That's
because,
a good choice.
Because Creature from the Black Lagoon is iconic, they could have gone a completely different direction.
Yes.
They could have established what they wanted with a story that's so far flung different from what we expect to see.
Uh-huh.
I just don't think this mummy's going to be it. I'll see it.
Well, you know how we want to like mash genre together and make mash franchises? I'm just going to blow your mind with this. Creature from the Black Lagoon versus Jaws. I'm just kidding.
You know, because as a kid, I loved the Abbott Costello movies. Like, when
are
we going
to
have...
Oh, my goodness.
And recently with Get Out, why don't we have Key and Peele meet the monsters?
Right?
I would watch that. Or, you know... I want to be excited about a new reign of Universal Monsters. When I look at this trailer, I don't see it.
I heard the next one they're going to make, and this is not even a joke.
Is Invisible Man?
No, the next one they were talking about was Bride of Frankenstein. And I'm like, why would you go to that next? That doesn't really make a lot of sense.
I've heard that they want to do an Invisible Man with Johnny Depp.
Well, it has to be better than that, like, Hollow Man movie they made with Kevin Bacon.
That's fair enough. I want to...
I feel like I could see him doing his Jack Sparrow as the Invisible Man. Oh, I've dropped my pants and you can't see me.
Right. This Mummy movie, I'm going to predict... Cruise, here's the thing about Cruise. He seems like a daffy human being. But I kind of, from time to time, enjoy some of his movies. Edge of Tomorrow.
I agree.
I liked Oblivion. I liked some of his movies.
He may be daffy. I think he means well, though.
But I think The Mummy is not going to be a hit. That's just my prediction.
I think it's going like it to make gobs of money. It's going to make gobs of money.
You think so?
Yeah.
Well, I just don't know, because you sandwich it between Wonder Woman. There's nothing big coming out maybe the week after, but... So then we moved to June 16th, and you said you hadn't heard anything about 47 Meters. So 47 Meters, it's funny because you just mentioned Jaws versus the creature from the Black Lagoon. 47 Meters is a shark movie.
Yes!
And I can't help but feel that maybe this release date, I'm sure the movie was made beforehand, the release date might relate to last summer's The Shallows.
Which I enjoyed Blake
Lively,
a lot.
Which was a hit, a modest hit. But so we've traded out Blake Lively for Mandy Moore.
That's a poor choice.
I'm not a huge Blake Lively fan, so that'd be what it may.
Why can't we get a Kate Upton movie?
You got two sisters on vacation, and they're trapped in a shark cage at the bottom of the ocean. Now, I've seen the trailer for this. It does look intense. Can you maintain that intensity for an entire movie? And you probably can. I don't know how good it's going to be. We will see. But 47 Meters... I suspect, too, this is going to be the smaller movie of this particular weekend.
Most likely.
Yeah, that's also shared with Pixar's Cars 3, which, Chris, I know you've talked incessantly. You want to do a whole episode only about Cars 3.
I have a great passion for all the works of Pixar.
Yeah.
Well, and by that, I mean a passion of hatred.
Now, I will... Yeah, you admitted to... You like the first couple Toy Stories.
I think I admitted to liking the second one because everyone and their uncle was like, this is the best movie ever. If you don't like this, you have no soul.
Yeah, whatever you say, man. Cars, admittedly. Cars 3. We've had a few original Pixar movies recently. We had that I personally think were good. Why we're going back to this well, I don't understand. Pixar's Car 3, my kids want to see it. To an extent, enjoy the first Cars movie. The second Cars movie, which in detailed an entire spy plot line, was like watching paint dry. I have no real interest in this. I really want to see Pixar doing new things each time out. They have two movies coming out this year.
I'll give them that. If they do much better when they're creating their own new stuff.
Yeah. There's a movie coming out called Coco, which deals with Mexican mythology. I'm interested in that movie. This looks like it's paying to keep the lights lit.
Yeah,
so to speak.
And it will, regardless of how good it is.
You're right. That's going to be the movie of the weekend, probably. Small movie, you and I just watched a trailer for this by a director I like, Colin Trevorrow, who did Safety Not Guaranteed, which I think was a really fun, small-budget time travel movie with Aubrey Plaza and Mark Duplass. And honestly, Plaza's not done a lot I've really enjoyed since then. She's kind of her career.
I felt there was about, like, to be honest, that was the best part of the movie, those two. I feel like there was a half a good movie in there, and that was their movie. And then all the other stuff they kind of put into it, I didn't care for as much. But I still thought overall it was a decent film.
And Trevorrow went on to do Jurassic World, which to me was a fun sequel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The second best of the Jurassic Park movies. That's not saying a lot. You and I were talking about how we just heard that Jeff Goldblum is going to be in the second one.
Yes.
So that's something. Trevorrow's going to do...
Just give me more Goldblum in general. I don't care what it is.
And Trevorrow's been tapped, I believe, to do the third Star Wars movie.
Really?
Interesting. So, good stuff there. This movie is called The Book of Henry. And to me, when you watch a trailer, you have expectations. This trailer started one way and ended another. Cast is interesting. We have Lee Pace in there. I didn't see Lee Pace anywhere in the trailers. I don't know if he's a narrator, who he is. Naomi Watts is in it. Maddie Ziegler. It also has Jacob Tremblay, who was in the movie Room with Brie Larson. I don't know if you saw that. Mm-hmm. Very good movie.
Not
the Tommy Wiseau movie, but the movie, the Oscar-nominated movie.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, very different, very different. And And Dean Norris from Breaking Bad in it, yes. too. You saw the trailer,
Chris. Trimmed down a bit, too.
Yeah, a little bit more, yeah. svelte than... yeah. What did you think?
I don't know. It looked interesting. It looked like it could go a lot of different directions. And honestly, I wasn't sure where it was going. And like it's like you said, though, you started off watching this thing, and you're like, you think you're seeing one movie, and then it kind of switched tracks.
Almost like a magical, realist, crazily. Very gentle kids movie.
Yes.
And about a boy and a single mother, about a genius boy and a single, yeah. mother. And then it becomes almost like a vigilante film.
Exactly.
Where this boy and his mother want to rescue this girl from a world of abuse.
Yeah.
And they may do it through sniper-esque means. It looks crazy a little bit.
Yeah,
and you and I were discussing, is it going to go all the way? Is it going to pull back?
I don't feel that it will, but time will tell. I mean, tone of the trailer led me to believe that potentially this is probably not going to go all the way.
I think this
there,
one's going to come down to how well acted and how well staged it is.
I agree.
And
yeah.
you got to. I like Naomi Watts. I'm always rooting for Naomi Watts.
I like Naomi Watts, too.
And I like Trevorrow. I think this has potential. I think it'll
definitely go see that.
So it looks interesting. So then we move to June 23rd with by far the movie I am most excited about, probably in the last 40 years of movies, Transformers: The Last Knight.
You must be joking.
Yeah, absolutely am. I have.
That is the least interesting movie on the docket this year, I think.
I'll mention Jonathan Demme passed away today, the director of Silence of the Lambs.
Oh.
Anthony Hopkins is in Transformers: The Last Knight.
How the mighty have fallen.
There's going to be a Bumblebee spinoff movie after this.
I believe it.
There's a trailer where Optimus Prime makes the statement that in order to save my people, I have to kill the humans. Didn't he shoot Leonard Nimoy in the back of the head for that same thinking 3 movies ago? This series sucks.
I can't disagree with you. I want to like
this
these
trailer.
Movies, no, they're awful.
I watched the last movie and it was like, there was a scene where a Transformer was thrown through a bus that had a giant Victoria's Secrets ad on the side, and that basically encapsulates the entire series.
No, what encapsulates the entire series is when the Bud Light truck smashed, and like all the Bud Light bottles roll out, and like you have...
Transformers is the Bud Light of movies.
That, another, no truer statement has ever been said on this podcast. It is what it is. I mean, it's...
Mark Wahlberg kind of like is staring into the mid-distance and thinking, where is the Funky Bunch? What more can be said? Like, I don't know why these movies are still being made. I feel bad because...
I do know. Because the last one made, like, billions of dollars.
The same day Transformers: The Last Knight comes out, we have a movie called The Bad Bat. This is directed by Anna Lily Amirpour, who did a movie that you and I really liked back in 2014 called The Girl Walks Home Alone at Night.
Yes,
or A Girl
like,
Walks
that,
Home Alone at Night.
That name is very familiar. Yeah, I really
Black and White horror film. We talked about it when we were doing the first run of Phantom Galaxy, I think in the third episode or so, like the October episode.
I think we mentioned it a few times.
We probably have. Good movie, and she's back. This is her second feature. It's a post-apocalyptic movie. Draw some parallels, probably less to Mad Max and more to a movie like A Boy and His Dog, kind of a weirdo, or Six String Samurai. Like, most people are thinking, what's A Boy and His Dog? A Six String Samurai. But this looks like a fun, weird movie. It's described on IMDb as a dystopian love story, and it is set in Texas. And
you've already reeled me in.
You have cannibals. You have Jason Momoa as a cannibal.
Awesome.
The main character falls prey to the cannibals early on and spends most of the rest of the movie without an arm and a leg. I mean, how can you go wrong? Keanu Reeves is a zealot religious leader of a small faction in this world. I would watch pretty much anything this director did. I'm glad she did this movie.
Yeah, that sounds kind of awesome.
It looks like a nice fresh breath of crazy in the middle of the summer. So keep in mind, The Bad Batch.
Don't spend your money on Transformers.
No, so, no, man. Support the little movie. And if Bad Batch is not in your area, maybe The Beguiled by Sofia
Coppola.
This
also sounds fantastic to me.
Yeah, you know, so we have Elle Fanning, we have Nicole Kidman and Kirsten Dunst. Every single one of those names, I don't know if I've seen them recently.
And another female, Sofia Coppola. I love her movies.
Yeah,
she's a great director.
And Kirsten Dunst, speaking of Sofia Coppola, Kirsten Dunst has a couple movies with her. She did Marie Antoinette, which I like.
Uh-huh.
But I think my favorite Coppola movie is probably still, I think, one of her first, which was The Virgin Suicides.
Yeah.
Virgin Suicides is a, like, a super underrated movie in my mind.
It's fantastic.
I actually saw it theaters when it came out. It's a very haunting movie. It kind of creeps up on you.
Mm-hmm.
The Beguiled.
One of the weirdest performances for Danny DeVito too.
Oh, in
he was like he was like the shrink.
You're right. You're right. And James Woods and Kathleen Turner were the parents in that movie. Good movie. I'd recommend it. This one is interesting because, in a sense, I don't want to use the term remake, but there was a version that's made with Clint Eastwood in the 70s, a very kind of weird, understated movie. I won't go so far as to say it's a horror film, but it's definitely a darker, kind of twisted drama. And
it looks like a study of human nature. Like, to a certain
extent. And honestly, let's be honest, Chris, does Coppola make any other kinds of movies? She really doesn't. Lost in Translation somewhere. Yeah. All of her movies at some level are very quiet, sometimes drawn out character studies, like you said. But this deals with a girls' school in Virginia during the Civil War. These young women they've been kind of sheltered from the outside world. Sounds a lot like the Virgin Suicides.
Yes.
And they take in a wounded Union soldier. And then the plot synopsis here mentions sexual tension. That's probably an understatement, but the trailer. So also we've got that Colin Farrell is playing the soldier who's taken in. So there's a greasy young man to take. And if you've seen the original movie, you kind of know the twist. Probably not that much of a twist that I'm not going to mention here, but the movie does take on some very sinister, very Victorian. I'd almost say this is a Western mixed with some Victorian Gothic overtones. And if you don't know the old movie, I would say just sit the old movie over here, watch the new one first, and then compare. See what you think. The Clint Eastwood movie is an interesting movie. I don't think it's a completely successful movie. I want to see what Coppola does with it. So
yeah.
The Beguiled, that is June 23rd. June 30th, there's a movie coming out. It's interesting because there's three movies on the slate for June 30th. And this is usually when you get your big stuff. This is your almost... we don't really have a 4th of July weekend here, you know, this year, in terms of movie releases. We have June 30th, and then we have July 6th. And the three movies listed here, they're not what I think of as big July 4th opener films.
Mm-hmm.
The first one is Amityville: The Awakening. Now, Chris...
we have a special connection with this film.
We do.
And this back in 2014.
Yeah. Back in August of 2014, you and I went to see Sin City 2, A Dame to Kill For, which is probably in and of itself a mistake.
Yes.
But we went to the theater. We went in the evening, paid our full ticket price. We weren't able to catch the screening. The trailers come on. What's now, like 15 minutes worth of trailers?
20.
Yeah. We get to about the fifth or sixth trailer, which happens to be an Amityville The Awakening trailer. Bella Thorne, and what I remember was Jennifer Jason Leigh's in the movie. I confirmed today, this is the same movie. The trailer gets about, 40 seconds in?
Yes.
And it goes off. And the lights go off. And the whole theater gets plunged into complete darkness.
No lights anymore.
Wow, this is a pretty cool kind of way to, advertise Amityville. But then, 5 minutes later, ushers are coming in telling us we all have to leave. This is like a 9, 10 o'clock showing, mind you. So we're all out in the lobby of the theater.
People panic, people talking and stuff.
The electricity is going out down the entire avenue where the movie theater is and the movie theater. So they give us a ticket. We can come back the next day and watch it. Interestingly enough, the Amityville trailer was not attached to the second night we watched the movie.
So weird. And, I just, to this day, I get so much enjoyment out of the fact that we finally saw a trailer for a movie so bad, it just turned the power off in the entire theater. So, that's great.
We did get to finally see Sin City 2. It was not worth
all of our travails.
The two-night investment to see the film. But the Amityville Awakening, and here's the funny part, it says June 30th, but I've seen alternate dates too, so who knows if it gets pushed back again. This movie was originally supposed to come out in January of 2015. We are now talking. This has happened before. I remember back in the day, Eaters of the Dead, the Michael Crichton movie, supposed to come out in the the spring of 1998. Didn't come out until the late summer, early fall of 1999. Sometimes you see these movies, they get pushed back and pushed back. And it was eventually released as The 13th Warrior. Night Watch with Ewan McGregor, pushed back years, and then finally gets released. Amityville The Awakening is 3 years running until it finally reaches us. that the director, who's Frank Coughlin, hasn't done anything that really looks worthwhile. Bella Thorne was a Disney... And in fact, Frank Coughlin has done an entire movie in between the time that this movie was made and when it will be released.
Dang.
And Bella Thorne was a Disney Channel star at the time. Jennifer Jason Leigh is in this, but Amityville is one of those series that has the distinction of being a series, and I've probably seen most of the movies in the general, there's five or six of them now, and it's a series where I've not liked a single solitary movie that's been released, and the trailer for this doesn't suggest that I'm gonna change
it. Yeah, it does not look very good for what we saw.
No. And you would have thought that given that The Conjuring has been popular last year, Conjuring 2 comes out, it has an opening,
they talk about
Amityville. Last year would have been a perfect time to release this.
Right?
I don't understand, even with reshoots, why this film's still sitting out there. Doesn't bode well. I'd say save your money.
I don't know, though. I mean, what else is coming out then?
You got Despicable Me 3.
Yep, save your money.
Yeah, you know what? I'm not going to say anything else about that either. We've had three. We've had Despicable Me 1, Despicable Me 2, Minions movies. My kids want to see it, but again, this is a movie that seems just to be a cash cow. We're heading into Madagascar.
Sacrifices you make as a parent for your children. Oh my goodness.
You're heading into Madagascar territory or Ice Age territory at this point. The same time frame, we have a movie that called Wish Upon, who's directed by John R. Leonetti, who did the original Annabelle movie, which again doesn't bode well.
No,
for
it
him.
Does not.
This has Joey King, Sherilyn Finn from Twin Peaks in it. I've seen the trailer for this. It's one of those movies that I feel like if you were reading an article on Creepypasta, I described this. My wife and I just recently watched The Bye Bye Man, and for all of our listeners out there, feel free to avoid that film. The Bye Bye Man, Wish Upon, they look like the kind of stories that would work well as a creepypasta article that you spend about 3 minutes reading.
Yes.
A kind of story written in
first
person.
And then you move on.
And then you move on. It deals with a story that's well-worn all the way back to the Monkey's Paw, where there's an arcane device that allows you to make a wish. And if you make that wish, you're going to have to pay the piper at some point.
Wow.
Now, from a teenage perspective, there is an interesting idea of how when teenagers have extreme emotions, their wishes tend to be extreme.
Yeah.
I like the scene where Joey King makes a wish that she just wishes that her high school nemesis would just rot. But this movie doesn't look like the movie that's going to pay off that idea of I wish my nemesis would just rot. So we
would watch that one.
We will see. But again, I'm thinking you're going to see a PG-13 horror movie that puts you through your paces and drops you back out of the theater, and you're like, where did my $10 go?
Yep.
July. So now we're moving into July. We're almost there, Chris. July 7th has Spider-Man Homecoming. What are your thoughts on this? We saw Spider-Man show up last year in Civil War. Mm-hmm. He had a nice debut, I thought.
I thought that was a great debut
for
Spider-Man.
I'd say that Marissa Tomei, a good choice.
Let me tell you,
bit more Miss December than Miss. I mean, she's more Aunt December than Aunt May. But what do you think?
Yeah, I love her as Aunt May. That was a brilliant casting choice.
Well, you know, it's funny because I just showed my kids. We watched Spider-Man 2002, and there's this weird idea that Aunt May and Uncle Ben need to be old, but it doesn't quite make sense.
Does not make sense
at all. Spider-Man is a teen boy. And his parents just recently died.
Exactly.
You know?
Like, why not make them grandpa?
Yeah, Rosemary Harris and Cliff Robertson, well, great actors. Like, why are they that old?
Yeah, and to be fair, I loved her as Aunt May in those movies. Like, she was probably one of the better characters in that series.
It's funny because Aunt May keeps getting younger. You know, Sally Field was Aunt May in the recents. But Aunt May's been a central focus of those movies. I do like, and I think Marissa Tomei is a great actress, so I'm interested in seeing in what
comes again, this is I'm not as excited for this as say Guardians 2 or Thor Ragnarok, but this looks fun. This looks like a light, fun movie. They had a good intro to the character in Civil War. I think Marvel's official studio take on Spider-Man is going to be better than what we've seen thus far. I think they did an excellent Spider-Man 2 with Tobey Maguire years ago.
I rewatched that, and
I still think that's an excellent version of Spider-Man.
There's flaws, but it's fun. It gets the character.
Yeah. So I think outside of that, this is probably the best version we've seen of Spider-Man thus far.
Yeah, I'm not disagreeing. I like Tom Holland. I thought his take was fun. Yeah. I feel like he gets that quippy, nervous teenage energy right.
Yes,
for the character.
Absolutely.
I want to see Michael Keaton doing his like evil Birdman totally. As the Vulture. Yes. So the Vulture's not a character I think works in generally. But again,
it becomes so much better because of Birdman.
Birdman and Batman, really. And Keaton, I like Keaton. He's underrated.
He is.
I feel like when Bill Murray had his sort of career renaissance, Michael Keaton deserved one too. But Bill Murray was making movies like Lost in Translation, and Michael Keaton was making movies like White Noise. So sadly, but I'm always rooting for Keaton, and he found his groove later with Birdman. So, you know, I agree. It's Spider-Man Homecoming looks like a lighter film. They have the opportunity to kind of nail Spider-Man here. I've seen too many of these Spider-Man movies already. That's the problem.
Yeah. I agree.
Yeah. Beating on a dead horse here, but small movie coming out the same time. A Ghost Story, directed by David Lowery. David Lowery's a director who has only recently cropped up. He's done two movies now, Ain't Them Body Saints, and last year he did for Disney, was kind of surprised, Peach Dragon, which was a really good movie. Ghost Story has Mara Rooney and Casey Affleck, who were both in Ain't Them Body Saints. It is a ghost story. It's an interesting... I haven't seen the film yet. I've heard from a few people that I know who saw it at some of the film festivals that it's really good. And
the trailer looks fairly intriguing.
Have you seen the trailer?
Yeah.
So the interesting thing here is it does deal with a woman who has lost her husband, Casey Affleck, and he's coming back to kind of make his presence known to his family. What I think is interesting is that when he appears, he is not appearing as Casey Affleck in like special effects or some ghostly makeup. He's a sheet with two eye holes cut in it, you know, Charlie Brown style. Every time this ghost shows up, it's a dude in a sheet covered up, just sort of floating into scenes. He just walks in, really. Mm-hmm. But it looks compelling. I feel like it looks emotional. It looks poignant. What do you think?
Yeah, it looks fun. Looks interesting. Definitely looks like a dramatic story. I doubt this is in any way, even though there's a ghost, really any kind of spookiness to it.
No.
It looks fascinating, though. I think it'll be interesting. I'm looking forward to seeing it.
It does have the melancholy tone of a ghost story. Mm-hmm. I'd say that. It does. You're right. I would be astonished if there's a single scare in this movie. Yes. But I think that this has that magical realist style. And I like Lowry. I like that he's able to move from small film, Disney film, small film again, and retain a lot of what makes him a good filmmaker. July 14th, War for the Planet of the Apes. I liked Rise of the Planet of the Apes. Liked Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. What do you think?
Consider my ticket already purchased.
Yeah.
I'm already sold on this. I love those movies. I think they've done a great job with it, with creating this universe. And yeah, this kind of looks like a dark... another story of great loss for Caesar and, you know, fighting up against humans. But I don't know. Just something about this whole series really appeals to me. And having, Woody Harrelson in it as, like, the main opponent.
The first few teasers, he looks kind of nutty. Sold because I see Woody Harrelson and he's going to fight. And, then, like, we've had these characters who are the bad guy who's lost somebody and he means well. You know, Gary Oldman did that last time in Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. You know, when we finally got
Woody
the full trailer...
Woody just looks like he's going nutty, and I like that.
Yeah. Andy Serkis has never gotten, I don't think, the credit he really deserves for some of the work he's done.
Yeah.
In movies
amazing
like Lord of the Rings as Gollum. Mm-hmm. King Kong. The pantomime in that movie. That's a movie I think there are flaws to it, but it's greatly underrated, I think, where it excels. And then to do Caesar now for the third time, I mean, he's developing this character, and Caesar is... Mm-hmm. Is more of a character in this movie, I think, than he's ever been. And I'm excited for these movies. I like these movies. You and I got a chance this past summer with a couple others to go to, and you can go back to our first episode of Phantom Galaxy and hear this, to see Planet of the Apes, the original, the 1968 Heston movie,
yes,
at the Senator. And these movies are a little bit of a callback. You know, there's some substance there. The Planet of the Apes series has not always had the highest of quality. I really dislike the Burton version. Couple movies in the original series were not very good. This series so far is going strong, and it subtly the special effects seem to improve each time. Yes. And I'm intrigued. For such a you kind of mentioned how it's kind of a dour concept. You know, humanity's dying, the apes are under fire,
and yet they manage
to make an exciting adventure movie out of it.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to it. Matt Reeves has done a great job. He took over from the director of the first movie. Matt Reeves, of course, did Cloverfield and Let Me In. And Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, I thought, in a lot of ways, was a stronger movie than Rise of the Planet of the Apes. So the next movie we're going to talk about is not exactly science fiction, fantasy, or horror, but it's from a director who, up until this point, hasn't done anything that I wouldn't say is genre. You know, movies like Memento, movies like Insomnia. Then he did the Batman series and the Prestige, Christopher Nolan. I mean, so far he's pretty much stayed within genre lines. And then on July 21st, we're going to get Dunkirk, which is a historical action film, a war film.
And this looks really good.
Yeah, man, it does. It really does. I mean, I like Nolan. I loved all of his early stuff. Mm-hmm. I liked the Batman movies. I really liked Inception.
Yeah.
But I think
it'll be interesting to see him take something that's truly grounded in reality and see what he makes out of it.
Yeah, and I think he has the ability to do so. And I like that the trailer, while clearly a war film, it's not pushing way out there in terms of special effects. It's not trying to be, at least from the trailer, Saving Private Ryan.
Mm-hmm.
It's not trying to be Pearl Harbor or some giant movie. It looks like Nolan is taking everything that he's learned on the other movies he made and bringing it to this. And he's working with a lot of the same actors. You have Tom Hardy and Cillian Murphy, Mark Rylance, who was great in Bridge of Spies, which is a Spielberg movie. I'm looking forward to it. I mean, it doesn't fall within genre lines, but it's probably one of the movies I'm most excited about this year.
I'm surprised that's not a little closer to July 4th. It was pretty patriotic kind of movie. I mean, this takes place obviously over in Europe, but It the overall tone of it is
pretty. You know, I think though pushing it a little bit out, this is a date that is very similar, I think, to the date when Saving Private Ryan came out. A later summer release, you're getting a little closer to the Oscars, but you get a point in time when, as you transition into August, you get that kind of limbo region between when you have all the big kind of kids movies coming out and then when you have the movies that are kind of aimed at a little more at adults. So it's I think that they're probably hedging their bets there. Of course, if you have no interest in things in the adult world, you could always go see on the same date by another director that I love, Luc Besson's Valerian and the City of a Thousand Planets, which seems like complete and utter nonsense. And
it
will
looks awesome.
Be there. This literally looks like the sequel to The Fifth Element that I've been waiting for ever since 1997, when I can't help it. I love The Fifth Element. It's a silly movie. I thought maybe it would pass. I was about 17 or 18 when I saw the movie. Besson admits to writing it as a teenager and then making it later. It's silly nonsense. But I watched this movie about 2 weeks ago with my kids and still love it. Valerian doesn't look any different. Valerian, the comic book by Pierre Christin, is kind of the influence for a lot of things like Star Wars, influence for pretty much anything Besson ever made. It goes back history-wise, and it probably predates most of the things that we know. That being said, when you see the trailer, it doesn't necessarily look like anything new. It looks like a big, pulpy, silly, wild movie.
Yes, and while all those things are entertaining, to be honest, I will go see any movie with Cara Delevingne. So,
yes. Cara Delevingne's great. Like, I think she's a good actress. She's also very beautiful, which I'm sure is kind of what you're referencing there. She was in a movie called Paper Town, which I really liked. She was the best thing, probably, about Suicide Squad.
Yeah,
last summer.
Oh, for my money, give me Enchantress.
And she and baby Leonardo DiCaprio, Dane DeHaan, are in the movie, and Clive Owen and Ethan Hawke and Rihanna. I mean,
honestly, this is a comic book of a movie. Like, this is just, like, big bright colors, big, you know, special effects. This looks fantastic in a, on a purely visceral sense. Like, I will go see it just for the pure madness and insanity.
And I think it's going to be a giant bomb.
Possibly, but it looks probably great.
It's going to be one of those movies like John Carter.
No one will like it.
Where everyone talks about terrible it is. I buy the Blu-ray for $6 and I'm happy to have it and watch it every few years. I'm in for it. I like Luc Besson. Yeah. He doesn't hit something out of the park every time. Valerian the City of a Thousand Planets, it's tapped into those things that make me happy. I look at the trailer and say, somebody made this movie just for me. July 28th, Atomic Blonde. It's another movie that looks like they made it for 12-year-old me. Yes.
12-year-old me as well.
Yeah. What do you think about this one? Directed by a guy who was previously a stunt coordinator and director. Directed some scenes, the action scenes, I assume, for John Wick.
Action scenes in the trailer look very similar to John Wick, and I enjoy those movies just on a pure just action level. They're not like great art, but they are just a lot of fun. This looks like it's a lot of fun. This looks like might be a little more vicious even than John Wick, just in tone.
Yeah, I feel like if you took like an 11-year-old boy, 12-year-old boy, 13, and hooked them to a machine and like, what is your ultimate movie? You might get Valerian and you might get Atomic Blonde. It depends on how much exposure your 13-year-old has had to the ways of the world. I mean, there are scenes in this movie. You obviously have Charlize Theron, who seems to be, since Mad
Max... Again, I will see anything with Charlize.
...has just been moving in Fast and Furious into her own action phase. There's a scene where she just
apparently she chipped her tooth while she was making this movie.
I could almost see that in the trailer.
Yeah,
she was like, there's a scene in a taxi where she beats three guys to pieces with a high heel.
Yes.
She makes out with Sofia Boutella in the trailer. That's going to be enough for some people. The movie...
Bing!
James McAvoy's in it. It looks like another crazy romp. Honestly, if I didn't know that Luc Besson had just directed Valerian the City of a Thousand Planets, I would have figured he was directing Atomic Blonde.
I could see that, yeah.
It has a La Femme Nikita absolutely kind of feel to it. Yeah. It's a female James Bond sort of thing going.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, Angelina Jolie did Salt several years ago, but she's got nothing on this. So
this looks intense. I'm down to check that out.
Yeah, I probably won't have time because I'll probably be seeing the Emoji Movie.
I knew it. I knew there was an audience for this movie somewhere.
So I don't know. So the voices of Anna Faris, T.J. Miller, and Sofia Vergara... In a movie where emojis are the central characters. This is the third animated movie I've mentioned. The third movie I have literally no interest in seeing. I will probably not even tell my children this is coming to the theaters because I'd rather not. They don't even know what an emoji is at this point.
I feel like this is a movie that would have been like a parody for something like Mad Magazine.
Right, right.
Or something.
Funny
like,
or Die releases.
Like somebody
a
comes
for
up with this idea
movie.
Is like, oh, look how stupid and commercial we've gotten as a society. Let's make a movie about emojis. Like, the mind boggles at how this thing even got made.
It's just a shot in the dark, I think. It you know what?
It's going to make boatloads of money.
It probably will. So let's move on to August. So that's July going out with a whimper instead of a bang.
I'm pretty excited.
Unless you go see Atomic Blonde.
Yeah.
So I have some reservations about the next movie. Not so much the movie itself, but I don't think this is a real release date. The Dark Tower. I've been waiting years to see Stephen King's The Dark Tower. Stephen King's The Gunslinger. I will point out that this is not Stephen King's The Gunslinger. It's The Dark Tower. If you've read the books, you know there's a lot more going on here than just a simple adaptation of the first book. But it's interesting. We have Idris Elba as Roland Deschain, who's the gunslinger. This is a
great casting
fantasy
decision.
Sci-fi horror. This is the centerpiece. The magnetic core of everything Stephen King has done revolves around, to a sense, The Dark Tower. Matthew McConaughey plays a man in black. Go to Wikipedia and read more if you want to know, because I'm not going to talk about that aspect anymore. Except to say that we have a movie coming out on August 4th that's been pushed back already from February or January. And we still don't have a trailer, Chris. I don't think there's a single...
That bothers me.
There's not a single movie on this list.
I'm so excited about it, but I have absolute reservations because there's nothing.
Footage, and I think a basic trailer played at Comic-Con, but this movie's been pushed back a couple times. I'm honestly, unless we get some next couple days, I'm going to be astonished if this movie releases on August 4th. I hope it does. I want to see it. this is a very ambitious project. Previously,
a lot of people excited about this.
They want to release this movie. King has claimed I think King has said he's seen some of it. After this movie releases, they're supposed to do a mini series for it. There's a lot of stuff going on here, and so far, for something that you would think they'd want to build some confidence for, it's a little disconcerting that we're heading into May. We don't have a trailer for a movie that releases in August.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, Dark Tower, by far one of the movies I would normally be most excited for this summer. And I just don't know what to think because we haven't seen anything yet.
I agree.
And then on August 11th, we have the Annabelle sequel, Annabelle Creation, which I saw the original Annabelle, probably what you would consider a mediocre run-of-the-mill horror movie.
Absolutely.
It was a spinoff of The Conjuring. It wasn't nearly as good.
The first 10 minutes of The Conjuring were better than that.
Yeah. I will say this. A couple things. I love creepy dolls. Creepy dolls.
I mean,
you're going to get me with a creepy doll.
Absolutely.
This movie never rose to a level where I felt truly creeped out. I didn't feel frightened. I wasn't intrigued by what was going on. Annabelle Creation is sort of, I assume, a prequel. They are trying to do what they did with the Ouija board movies, where you had Ouija, which was just really a just bottom-of-the-barrel film, far worse than the original Annabelle. And then they did Ouija Origin of Evil, where they tapped the director that most people like, Mike Flanagan, who had done Absentia and who did Oculus. I wasn't a huge fan of Oculus. He did Hush. And now Annabelle Creation is directed by David Sandberg, who did Lights Out. I liked Lights Out. You and I both enjoyed it. So there's potential here. The trailer doesn't look terrible. I think you're right to say that the trailer looks a little derivative, a little generic. I'll give it a chance, but because, you know, creepy dolls.
That's right.
But
because creepy dolls. Exactly.
Because creepy dolls. And if you can't get your fix with Annabelle Creation on August 25th, you have a, looks like a pretty pretty nondescript horror movie called Polaroid.
Oh,
because
boy.
In case you were wondering if there's still any horror left in Polaroid cameras, there is. And Polaroid styled in the vein of The Ring of Final Destination, you know, in case there's anybody from the 90s who still wants to see that sort of a movie. Centers on a high school loner who stumbles upon a vintage Polaroid camera. And I'm sure it's going to capture somebody's soul.
It's certainly captured my imagination.
Nothing here that doesn't suggest that this is a straight
bottom of the barrel.
A studio dump at the end of the summer, hoping to cash in on some money.
People desperate to see a good horror movie.
The people who might end up in line for Annabelle and it sold out can just go into Polaroid. Now, this is interesting. You and I, a few years ago, went to see Jurassic Park, the 1993 version, in 3D, a re-release.
Yeah.
And you know what? Did Jurassic Park need to be in 3D? Nope, not at all.
Still fun.
Was it good to kind of go to the theater and see Jurassic Park in the theater again? Absolutely.
Yes.
So now we have Terminator 2 coming in 3D
to
the theater.
That's what I'm all about.
Yeah. You know what? Like, I was sitting there looking at it. I was like, you know what? If every other movie bombs this summer, we'll still get to see Terminator 2 in 3D. So there's that.
And I'm not sold on 3D, but just to see Terminator 2 again on the big screen, I don't care. I will do that.
To see again the big screen, but I don't know about you, but I never saw Terminator 2 in the big screen.
You know, yeah, that's a good point. I mean, to be fair, I never got to see Jurassic Park on the big screen either, growing up.
Now, I've been to Universal Studios and seen their Terminator ride that actually has Arnold and Linda Hamilton recorded pieces for the ride, and that was kind of fun.
Excellent.
A bit dated, to be fair, but yeah, I'm in for that. Let me put it this way, I'd rather see Terminator 2 in 3D than any of the Avatar sequels that James Cameron keeps talking about.
Them strong words.
I don't know. I mean, Avatar had some great special effects at the time, but it was anybody who walked out of that movie clamoring for 4 sequels.
Yes. I will see all 4 of those.
Fair enough, man. August 30th, there's the last animated movie on our list, and potentially the most interesting, only because it's not a sequel and it doesn't seem to be based off emojis, called Leap, which is a period piece that involves a young boy and a young girl. He wants to be an inventor, she wants to be a ballerina. But again, I think this is a French animated film. The style of the animation is interesting. The plot of the film looks interesting. It's one of the only movies on this list that I would legitimately want to take my kids to see because it seems to have a real story.
Is it the same people that did like Triplets of Belleville or?
No. It's 3D animation. The Magician. It's not as interesting as those. The Illusion. That was Sylvain Chomet. He's a cut above. Those movies are interesting movies for adults.
So in other words, this is just another
children's film. Okay. I don't know, thrown together, but it's a kids film. The animation is not going to distinguish itself. That's one of my problems, Chris, with the move to like the 3D animation versus 2D animation. It's harder to distinguish a character of your own in the animation style, and it's just not there. Triplets of Belleville, 2D animation. The Illusion is 2D animation. Like you said, very distinct. You can't look at those movies and not know they weren't made by the same person.
Yeah.
Who knows? Last movie I include on this list, it kind of rolls out a little bit at the beginning of September, but I'm excited about it.
Me too.
It's interesting. It's one of the Stephen King movies we actually have a trailer for.
Yes.
What do you think?
Watching the trailer, I did not know what to expect because I've been hearing for a while they've been working on it and I had not seen anything. Finally saw the trailer, and I think this time they may have nailed a pretty good interpretation. It looks really good. It looks like they've got a good feel of nostalgia in there, mixed in with some really creepy, scary moments.
Yeah, so the trailer opens, and if you're a person who's read it or even seen the miniseries that was that came out in early 90s, mm-hmm. right at the tippy top of the 90s, 1990, with Tim Curry mm-hmm. as Pennywise. A lot of people have fond memories of that. But I think if you go back and rewatch it, you realize that really Curry's Pennywise is the only real thing that still holds that thing together.
Whereas this looks like all around it's well put together.
Potentially. Yeah. The director, Andres Muschietti, who did Mama. I don't know if great. I liked Mama.
I thought it was okay.
Style of the movie, it wasn't wholly original. But it had some creepy moments. It had good atmosphere. And those things seem to have translated to this version as well. I do like the fact that they've split the book up. The book, the way that it played, moved back and forth between young kids, this losers club, mm-hmm. this group of kids who come together and fight this dark entity who's already claimed one of their own siblings. And the primary form it takes is a clown. And then years later, 30 years later, these who are now adults are finding that the monster, the clown, is back, and then they have to confront it. And King's book, which was huge, looked like you could beat a man to death with it. It was the kind of thing that kept switching between the past and the present. And the miniseries kind of did the same, kind of broke it apart a little bit, but the movie versions, from what I understand, are going to keep those events separate.
Mm-hmm.
So essentially, and what I appreciate was I was reading that they're not filming the back-to-back. They're going to do the first movie. Mm-hmm. If the first movie is successful, then they'll make the next movie. So the first movie we're going to get is arguably probably where most of the stronger material lies. That being said, in the book, some of the crazier, completely insane stuff is in that segment as well. But King, there were moments in it where I just feel like King just went way off the rails. There's one scene in particular in that earlier segment where you kind of see where King's going, but what he ultimately writes down is just infinitely creepy.
Yes.
And not in a cool horror book sort of way. But like you said, the trailer with Bill Skarsgård, who was in, I think you can see him if you want to go on Netflix, you can see him in Hemlock Grove. But it's interesting because when I went back to see, to look just at pictures of him, his clown looks creepy. Like, not in the same way that Curry's clown was creepy,
mm-hmm.
but I like what's going on there. There's a scene where they have a film strip running, and the film carousel is snapping pictures of Pennywise as he slowly sort of appears to the kids.
Mm-hmm.
There's one scene where he's sort of moving in fast motion that just looks like
kind of junky.
Yeah, kind of junky, kind of derivative. But every other way.
Then there's a scene, he's like coming up out of the water, and the water's like oozing down his forehead, like the hair matted down. It's freaky as hell.
There's a lot of choices. You can clearly see that there's a lot of effort and care put into this movie, and I honestly wouldn't be surprised if later on we're talking about how this is one of the stronger movies to emerge.
I mean, from what I've read, King's seen it and really likes it. So I think that's a good indicator.
It is. King, though, tends to like most movies based off of his work. There's a lot of times
he hated
King.
The Shining, which is a classic.
Yeah, I think his metric is how close is this to what I imagined? Mm. And of course, the problem with The Shining is that it is just so far flung. For to be fair, it's extraordinarily different from his book. So that's it. That's summer 2017 in a nutshell. There may be movies that watch, move in and out. I'm really looking forward. Honestly, I think the stuff I'm most excited about it either occurs at the very beginning of the summer. Things like Guardians of the Galaxy or something like that. I want to see Besson's new movie. I want to see Dunkirk.
Terminator 2.
I want to see Terminator 2, man. Yeah. There's lots of good stuff. I think that if you're an indie film connoisseur, there's going to be stuff on this list.
Yeah, there's a lot of cool stuff.
New stuff coming out over the summer that wasn't even on this list because of the way that nature works. You know, when you have a Hollywood movie, they pick a title and then they pick a release date and they know 3 years in advance. Sometimes with indie stuff, you don't know. But thanks for joining us. Guys, have a great night and we will see you again very soon.
We hope you enjoyed tonight's cast, and we hope that you'll join us again when Phantom Galaxy returns with a brand new episode. If you wish to contact us, you can email us at phantomcasts@gmail.com. All of the music in tonight's episode comes from Lithuanian artist Stellar Drone, whose ambient electronica creates soundscapes that are both haunting and fascinating to listen to. Stellar Drone's music is actually available for free on the internet in a couple of different places. You can find his Facebook page under Stellar Drone on Facebook, and you can also find all of his albums available on stellardrone.bandcamp.com. Until next time, this is Nathan Parabol with the Phantom Galaxy.